Okay. Hi, my name's Dove, and this is the first recording in about 3 weeks. and today's topic, Be'ezras Hashem, is, I think, going to be the topic of the 11th step. And I want to introduce into it a Torah concept, and then I want to explain that and how it is and why it is that I'm going to explain this Torah concept in a way that's not religious, and why I would do that. I'm going to explain the concept, which is a Torah concept, in a way that's actually not religious. Not guided towards me doing God's will because He wants me to, which is religion, is because this God wills it, and what I'm doing is worship, following His rules and stuff like that in a ritual way, but rather that it's for me, which is spiritual, where not religious, it's just spiritual, secular. If you look in the dictionary and you look up the word secular, you'll see that there are a few definitions, and one of them is spiritual but not religious. In other words, spiritually related to the soul and afterlife and meaning in life and right and wrong, but not from a worship kind of perspective where it's not guided by religious ritual worship or anything like that. So secular, it has that meaning also, besides what some Jews usually understand the word secular, meaning to be like math, science, things that have nothing to do with God. Secular means that it has plenty to do with God, it's just that it has nothing to do with any religious code or worship, which is like the program, right? The program's not religious ever, it's only spiritual. If you want to use the program for religion, then obviously you can. Just like if you want to eat food for religion, then the eating of the food becomes a religious experience, but there's nothing inherently religious about eating food, or for that matter, having sex, or going to work. These are things that are going to the bathroom. These are things that everybody does, whether they like to or not, because they need to survive and move on, or procreate, or have a decent marriage, or whatever it is, you know? So they're not essentially religious if you don't want them to be. You may be wrong by doing that, but that's for the religious people to discuss. Again, you know, the Ramban says basically that there can't be a mitzvah of believing in God in the Torah, and there can't be one of the Tayyag mitzvahs because of the sin, which the Bahag says, I think, there that it is. But the Ramban disagrees and says, how can you have a mitzvah to believe in Hashem, how can Hashem command you to believe in Him? If you accept the commandment, then that's because you believe in Him. And if you don't believe in Him before you get commanded, and you listen to this command, you hear the command, but you don't believe in Him, then where's the command? From who is it coming? It doesn't really make sense for God to require belief in Him at all. Therefore, if you look in the Ramban, everybody's medayik that his lashon there is bevorns this problem. And really what he's talking about, when the Rambam, in the Yad HaChazaka, when he talks about belief in God, he defines it as leidash yesha melaka. not to believe, but rather to know, which most people explain means to work on your emunah so that it becomes like knowledge, whereas the Ramban isn't discussing that here. The Ramban and the Bahag are arguing about whether there is a mitzvah at all to believe in God. Because logically, I'm sure you can see how it makes no sense for God to command us to believe in Him. Right? Like, I mean, because if it's a command, then that means he's God to you, and he's commanding you, and you better do it. But then you believe in him before he commands you. So why would he need? Why would he want to? Why would he need to do that? You know. So anyway, getting back to the. So the point of the point of the. Of the piece I want to talk about is that is the 11th step in the 11th step of the program. We talk. The words are one second. I'm going to get my 12 and 12 that I carry with me. Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So there are a number of things over here. One is sought through prayer and meditation. We're seeking that. Dirshu Hashem behimatzo. Dirshu Hashem, right? This is the idea of dirshu. Dorshecha Hashem. Those who seek you. We don't say those who grasp you or those who know you over here. We're talking about those who seek, you know. We're seeking to have knowledge of God's will for us. We're seeking to connect to God. We're, you know, so it's one thing is right away that the humility of the steps is being expressed beautifully as usual. And the idea that's being said here is that we don't get anything. We seek it. That's it. God may or may not give us this thing. You know? He may or may not give us an awareness of him. If a person says, well, that's what you get, that's what you should deserve, then he's looking at God as a candy machine instead of as God. And he's running the show instead of God running the show because I'm following the rule book and here's what it says, you know? So, you know, anyway, so that's one thing that's in this step here, sought through prayer and meditation. The other thing is to prayer and meditation. It says two things, prayer and meditation. I'll get into the difference between the two of them in a minute. In a few minutes. The other thing is to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Our contact with God, we can't improve at all. As all the Sfarim tell us, Hashem is truly in charge. There's no way to improve your contact with him. He's here. That's it. Mamali Kalalman, Sohu Kalalman. There's no escape from him. Like David HaMelech says in Kuf Mem Tes, not Kuf Mem Tes, Kuf Lamed Tes. Beautiful Tehillim to read, just Stam to read over and over. Unless you have OCD, then nothing's good to do over and over. But to read this Tehillim is a beautiful thing. He said, "Imasak Shemayim Shamat Anami Panecha Evrach Anami Panecha Esaser." Where can I hide from you? Where can I go to run away from you? Why does David HaMelech want to run away from Hashem? Well, he's expressing the human being. The human being wants to run away from God frequently. We want to be the one who is in charge of everything. We want to be the masters of our own ship, you know? We want to be the captains of our own ship, the masters of our fate. We want to pretend, we want to believe, we want to feel like we have the outcomes in our hands. The outcomes are within our power to reach. But the AA prayer so beautifully says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, because there are many things I cannot change. The courage to, for example, if you're fat, you can't change that today. You can go on a diet and start exercising and do the other things that people who know about diet and health will tell you correctly are the ways to lose weight. but there's nothing you can do today to lose that weight. You're 50 pounds overweight today, and you're not, that is not going to change today. You don't have that power. So God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Your husband or your wife may be so-and-so in such a way or of such a mind or whatever. You cannot change another person, certainly not today. You can't change it. Look at all the parents who are trying to change their children. It always backfires. Always backfires. You either create automatons or it backfires and they go the other way, you know? Or in some other way, it just doesn't work. And changing myself is something also that's very, very difficult. To change one meter, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, is harder than learning Shas 60 times or whatever. Different nisfos than what he said. But anyhow, so I may not have the power to do that, and certainly I don't have the power to do many, many things today. I don't have the power to change reality. You know, if you have no money, you don't have the power to change that. God may do that, and it may happen over time, but not changing when you want to change it. I don't have that power to make things happen when and in the way exactly that I want. And as you go through life, you'll see. Hashem doesn't have, like it says in the first of the Hallelujahs there, Hashem doesn't have desire for the people with strength, and the milchama doesn't go to the one who has better tachlisim, better techniques, whatever, or armaments. The battle goes, success goes to the one that God wishes, we see this over and over in life all the time. So it's not contact with him. It's not whether he's in charge or not. That's the question. It's whether I have conscious contact with God. That's something that I have the power to at least try to affect. I have the power to try to do something about that, and that's why it says sought through prayer and meditation. I can seek through prayer and meditation two things: to improve my conscious contact with God. In other words, my awareness of God. My own awareness, that's Bechira. I have that power, and that's within my choice. God grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference between them. So God can grant me the ability to do the things that I can do. We don't ask, in Yiddishkeit, we put it this way, Ein Somtin Al Hanes. That's a very, very essential concept in humility. Ein Somtin Al Hanes. Lo Sinasu Hashem. Don't test God. Lo, right? We don't rely on miracles. What does that mean? That's an idea of humility. Relying on a miracle is, for the average human being, I'm saying, is arrogant. That's why the Torah says don't do that. Eliyahu HaNavi did on Har Carmel. That was a rasha, but that's not the way normal people are, right? The Gemara says, Hachoni HaMagel, Kiach Varim Klape Maila. He drew a circle and he said, I'm not getting out of here until you bring rain, you know? And the Chachamim all said, Choni, if you wouldn't be Choni, we would have words with you. You know, we would put you in harem. You know, because that's not normal. You have in every generation there's one guy or gal who can do such a thing. One person maybe, you know, or maybe many generations past where there's one who can do that, you know? The point I'm trying to say isn't whether that's possible for an individual or not. The point is, it's not possible for you because you're not that individual. And the person who thinks they are, chances are, is just an arrogant person. That's not the Yiddish way. That's not the Torah way. And Baruch Hashem, it's not the program. The Torah says, don't test Hashem. The program says, sought through prayer and meditation. Because you don't expect it. You know that, oh, I deserve it. You know? You say, I'm seeking it. And that's all I can do as a person. And that's the wisdom to know the difference. So, moving on, sought through prayer and meditation. It's only seeking through prayer and meditation, which I'm going to explain what prayer and meditation both are, the difference. And that's the point of this talk, really. To improve our conscious contact with God. Again, the humility is dripping and oozing out of here because it's to improve, not to achieve. The arrogance of most of us in Yiddishkeit and most of us from people, the arrogance of, you know, that leads to failure in controlling our sex drive and our this and our that, as from habitual masturbators and porn users. It's our biggest problem is arrogance, usually, because we want madregas, and that's arrogance. Expecting madregas, wanting madregas to be known as, to be, you know, oh, I want to be Tshuva Gemura, Tzadik Gomer, this, that. It comes from arrogance, really. And it's very common in teenagers and young people. And it's less common in older people, Baruch Hashem. Because as we get older, we start to get knocked down and become right-sized if we're fortunate. If we're fortunate. When we're young, the exuberance of youth just pours forth. As, you know, if you look in the first piece in Bamidbar of the beautiful Sefer, not the Be'er Mayim Chaim, the Ma'or V'Shemesh, Ma'or V'Shemesh, the Chassidish Sefer, Ma'or V'Shemesh, if you look in that Sefer, you'll see that, I think it's by a Safran, but I'm not sure. If you look in that Sefer of the Ma'or V'Shemesh, the first piece in Bamidbar talks about this, the exuberance and arrogance of youth, that always fails. It always fails. It's beautiful. It's great in its time. And it serves a tremendous purpose. But it always fails. Just like the first Har Sinai, the first Mount Torah, which is his example of that exuberance and arrogance of youth, it failed. You know? We expect these things, and that's why we forge, you know, forth with a furor and a Lebedevkeit, expecting these things. And the Ma'or V'Shemesh in his first piece in the Midbar talks about how it's a great thing, but it always fails. Just like the first Matan Torah failed, it was the Kolos of Brukim and this and that. The second Aseres HaDibros was Kol Dema Madaka. That's the one that survived, because that is symbolic, and it's a beautiful piece to read, the first piece in Bamidbar, I think it's the very first piece in the Ma'or V'Shemesh. Gorgeous piece to read, especially if you're a middle-aged person, because you'll relate to it so much. That's the humble inner working of spirituality. So that succeeds. That succeeds. And that's improve our conscious contact with God. That's a humble way to do things. It's seeking. It's not making it happen. It's seeking it. And then it's to improve, not to get conscious contact with God. To improve our conscious contact with God. No black and white. That's youthful. That's adolescent. Adolescent black and white thinking is good for adolescents. Because if adolescents don't have an anchor, when you're too insecure in yourself and you don't have an anchor, then you simply don't have anything. Okay? That's the problem. The youth need black and white thinking. Because they need that anchor. They need some surety. And they don't have the capacity to have surety in gray, which is the way everything is for us in life and always will be. Well, not always, but usually is and usually will be. So that's humility. And that's what the Moreh B'Shemesh talks about in the second piece of that first vort that he has in Bamidbar. What the avoda of a mature person is after he collapses and falls and fails, based on the energy and momentum that he achieved in his exuberant, youthful, arrogant, loud, pushing, demanding avoda, which is good in its time, but just doesn't last. Just like the first Matan Torah was good in its time, but it didn't last. It cannot succeed. So improve, not to make it. Lahasig, no. To improve. Our conscious contact, not our contact, but our conscious contact. Contact we have. You and me, we're surrounded by God, filled with God, connected with God. He guides all of our actions. That's not a chiddush. That's not a da-da-da. And if you don't believe in it, so then you don't believe that he does. And that's that. But so we're not getting into debates here. It's about not having contact, or you know, but it's about having conscious contact, and it's about improving our conscious, our awareness of the contact. That's the whole point of this step 11, with God as we understood Him. And what does "as we understood Him" mean? Obviously, it's to prevent AA from becoming a Christian or a Jewish or whatever religious organ. You know, we don't want it to be something that's expressing any specific religion. We want the 12 steps to be secular, always secular, as I defined secular in the beginning. If you look in the average really good dictionary, you'll find like three definitions of secular, and the last one will be spiritual, even involving God, but not regarding any particular worship. That's one of the definitions of secular, and that's 12 steps. It's called, in Torah, we call that Derech Eretz. And it's called Derech Eretz, Chazal say, is Kodma LeTorah. It takes higher priority to Torah because it's necessary first. Otherwise, you won't succeed with Torah. That's what Derech Eretz, Kodma LeTorah, is the program. For an addict, the program, and for any human being, the basic concepts of sanity, which is what the goal of the program. In the second step, we say the goal of the program, which is, came to believe that a power greater than us, than ourselves, could restore us to, not sobriety, sanity. Sanity, which if you look it up in a dictionary, sanity is soundness of mind and sound living. That's sanity. So that's the goal of the program, of the addict who sets out in program to succeed. That's what you're aiming for, sanity. That's the humble way to do it, as opposed to the arrogant way to do it, which is what most people are aiming for, which is high madregan. And then they point to Chazal and they say, oh, you see, you're supposed to try to be a tzaddik. Look at this, look at that. But it's all arrogance. It's all that Matan Torah, you know, the first Matan Torah kind of approach, and it doesn't work. The Moreh B'Shemesh says the thing that works is the humble, quiet avoda of a middle-aged person who's been broken, whose arrogance has been broken. And that's, you know, that's normal. That's the way we all are, you know. The Chofetz Chaim went through that. Moshe Rabbeinu went through that probably in some strange way, because Moshe Rabbeinu was obviously very different than the average human being, even from birth, you know. But most of our tzaddikim had some kind of a fall and a break of their, you know, the arrogant derech, you know, and came to true humility and became, you know, came into their own, as it says, you know, tira olamcha b'chayecha, you know, they came into their own. So conscious contact with God as we understood Him is there for two things. Whenever it says as we understood Him in the steps, which is in step three and this step, I think, it doesn't mean specifically as we understood Him. In other words, whichever God you want, you know, Yashke, Shmashke, Poshke, here and there, whichever God you want to call God, this, Allah, blah, blah, blah. So we don't care. Okay, obviously, it's there for that. But there's a second reason, besides keeping the program secular, spiritual but secular, besides that, it's there to say as we understood Him, meaning literally as we understood Him. If you take 10 yeshiva bachurim or chassidish guys or whatever, even somewhere out, and you say, what's God to you? And, you know, or women, and you say, what's God to you, ma'am? And you know, each one will give you a different answer. First, they'll try to quote you a sefer, and they'll say, well, it's a Roev Einoni, right? He's, like, you know, the five things about the neshama, five things about Hashem, you know, master of the world, Adon Olam, Hayo Hoyva V'yihyeh, and Adon HaKol, and Baal Kol Yecholus, the Kol HaKochus Kulam, and this and that. And all that stuff is, no, you're reading me from Sfarim, you're talking about God. I want to know about your relationship with God. How do you understand God? You know, Yod Eish Shemecha, not Yod Echa, Yod Eish Shemecha. What's his name? Like with Noach Weinberg, used to say, how do you relate to him? What does he mean to you? Not to the world, not what do you believe he is, but what is he to you? What do you get out of him? Why do you care about him? For you, what does he do for you? What's your relationship with him? What are you going to live and die with? What is your awareness? How do you understand him, in other words? How do you understand your wife? How do you understand your husband? That determines the relationship. That says it all, is how you understand that person. How do you see that person? What is he to you? What is she to you? You know? So in the same way, your relationship with God, what is God to you? That's as we understood him, according to my friend Chuck C., great AA. If you ever get a chance, two people in AA, tremendous people to hear, in my opinion. If you hear their talks, they're both dead now, but their talks are on the internet. They are available for free. One is Chuck C., and another is even better, is Sandy B. S is in Sam. A-N-D-Y, Sandy B. B is short for Beach. His name is Sandy Beach. Tremendous explanations of program, the steps, the core of the program, step 3 and step 11 and everything else. So as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out, two things in step 11. I'm not going to get into that exactly. But you see that there are two things here. Praying only, not also, but only, for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. I want to know what it is that you want me to do, what it is that I can do, what am I able to do, you know? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, you know? Sometimes I cannot change your will for me, because that's your will for me, not my will for me, you know? Let me know your will for me and help me accept the things I cannot change, which is your, one of them is your will for me. I may not be able to change. And the power to carry that out is, and help me know, and grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can. You know, the power to carry that out can be a lot of things, accepting your will and carrying it out, or accepting things that I need to change or can change, and the power to carry that out, the commitment to carry that out, the emotional fortitude to carry it out. But that's really what the 11th step is about, and that's a separate discussion, really. The 11th step is a bittul to the will of Hashem and practicing the idea of not asking him for anything for ourselves anymore, which is a big discussion. A lot of firm guys have talked about this and asked, how can this be? This is against Yiddishkeit, but, you know, the Sfarim tell us in Shemoneh Esrei to beg Hashem for what you want, and Moshe Rabbeinu begged 515 times for what he wanted. He wanted this, he wanted that, he wanted the other thing, and, you know, going to Eretz Yisrael and this and that and that and that. So like, you know, and a kaveil Hashem, chazak v'ameis l'decha, the kaveil Hashem, if at first he doesn't give you the thing, then beg him for it again and push again and again. And if he doesn't do it, push again and again. Ritzi Meyer, Shlita Tzadik, he talks about this frequently, that begging Hashem over and over and over So is this contrary to this concept? And I say no, not necessarily. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. It depends on who's doing the begging and why. But that's a separate talk. The thing I want to focus on, really, and this is the main focus of this entire talk, is the piece before about what's the difference between prayer and meditation. And when I, Bez Hashem, explain that out clearly, if it comes out clearly, if I explain that clearly, then what's going to result from that is that the answers to the inclarities that I brought up about will, his will for us and the power to carry that out, only asking for that, sought through prayer instead of God, these different things are going to be made very clear. We're going to have a lot of clarity in what exactly is going on in this step and in the general thrust of the program altogether. So what's the difference between prayer and meditation? I want to start off with a vort and connected with last week's Parsha B'Ha'alosecha. When it says, Kein Asa Aharon in the Torah, that Aharon lit the menorah exactly as Hashem commanded him. Rashi over there says, a very interesting comment, Rashi over there says, Kein Asa Aharon, I believe I have the words right, I don't have a chumash in front of me, I apologize if the Dibur HaMaskil are a little different, but Aharon did just so, Shaloshina. The Torah tells us, the Torah is informing us, Shaloshina, that Aharon didn't change anything from what Hashem commanded him. So the Sfarim and Bali Musar and Bali Machshava, Svasemes, and of course, and different Tzaddikim talk about, what does that mean, Shaloshina? What kind of a Shavach is that? And it's such a great Shavach that the Torah goes out of its way to say it in the Torah, that Aharon, and you don't see that avoda, you don't see that word by most other tzaddikim, including, I don't know if you see it by Moshe Rabbeinu at all. It's a special thing by Aharon, and by Klal Yisrael in general. I think also sometimes when it says that, I think that they have a similar drasha, but specifically here by Aharon, it says that he did the avoda of the Neros, of the menorah HaTahora, and Loshina, he didn't change, he didn't alter anything. So you know, in times of the Mishnah, they had big problems with Tzedukim and all those groups, and it was a big tragedy. But these people understood the Torah and what Hashem wants, supposedly, very differently. They had to say a different pshat, a different way than what the Jews were doing, which is, I believe, comes from arrogance, to have to say different, to have to have a chiddush, to have to disagree. It's called machlokes she'ena l'shem shemayim. And they insisted that there's no Torah she'bal peh explanation of the Torah. That's at least, whatever, that they made up their own, really, in the end, which is what the Kuzari discusses at great length. That the term means something different, and therefore they had to make these people who were Kohanim Gedolim, which were often installed by the Roman procurator at the time, or the Greek one, they had to make them swear that they would not change anything from what the Avoda is that they are instructed to do by Chazal, because they would change the order of the Ketores because of the way the Psukim are worded kind of funny, and they would change the order of it, and in the Kodesh, Kodeshim itself, and it would be, like, really bad. So that's like Shina. Is that what it means? Shaloshina? Magid, the Shaloshina? The Torah said that Aharon didn't change the Avodah from what he was commanded? Chas v'shalom. Aharon HaKohen is the Torah Shabbal Peh, like the Tzedek goes on in Hanukkah. If you look at it, the first piece, I think it is in Hanukkah. It's gorgeous. Aharon is the Torah Shabbal Peh. He's the whole idea of Torah Shabbal Peh is, how can you give a shvach on him, Shaloshina, that he didn't do like some other people that might say, well, let me interpret this mitzvah a little different and do it in a different way that it says, because I like it better this way. It's like, of course, Hashem says put on tzitzis, he's going to have 8 strings, 4 corners, 5 knots, whatever it is, I mean, he's not going to do it differently. He's not going to make 6 knots. That's a shvach for Aharon Dafka, the great tzaddik. Aharon, you know, ridiculous. So they explain Lo Shina as meaning something else. They say Lo Shina means that he didn't introduce Aaron. The uniqueness of Aaron was he didn't introduce into his avoda of cleaning out and lighting the and filling and preparing and lighting the candles, the oil candles of the Menorah HaTahorah. He didn't do that stuff his way. He didn't inject his own individuality into the avoda of the candle. There was no, when you looked at it, you wouldn't perceive, that's Aaron who did it. You know, like by many tzaddikim, you see that, you read a vort, you say, that's a brisker vort. That's a sfasemis. I can tell. That's a grah. You can tell it's a grah vort. They're all incredibly logical, straight, literal, clear, and you know. So like what you know, styles and stuff. Each navi had his own signon, it says. And if a navi came and it was misnabe and a signon of another navi, you knew he was a navi sheker, because it can't be. So there's a signon. Aaron had no signon. He had no. Maybe that comes from the Greek word sign. I don't know. He had no sign. He had no. You couldn't tell this was Aaron doing this. This was a man who took himself and obliterated himself in front of the Rabbanu Shalom. Not in a negative way, Chas v'Shalom, but he just said, you be in my hands. You move my hands to do what you want to do. I don't want to change. I don't want to be Mishana, Lo Shina. I don't want to change the avoda from exactly the way you described it in the Torah. And this gets into a very deep thing, which is that the Torah Shabbat Peh is considered a woman. The Torah Shabbat Sava is considered a man. The woman is the din side. The woman is the din side. The man is the maid, like the proto-female, the proto-male. Chesed is the proto-male side, and the proto-female side is the Gevura side. And the Torah Shabbat Sav is considered also in a similar kind of fashion, but the idea is when in the Torah Shabbat Peh, when it refers to the Pasuk, it says Rahmana Amar Rahmana. Because the Torah Shabbat Peh is considered the female Gevura side, which is the actual application of mitzvahs requires Gevura, not chesed. It requires Gevura mainly. So to actually carry it out, that's the actual carrying out of the plan is Bina. The plan itself is Chachma, you know? So I'm not getting into Kabbalah here. I'm sorry. But again, the Rambam Paskins, based on the Gemara, I'm told it's in Yevamos, that says that a man is supposed to say, my wife, I mechabed her as much, I love her like my own body, Ishti Kigufi, I love her like my own body, Ohavo Kigufo, I love her like my own body. In other words, Behavdolech Kamocha, like for real, Rabbi Akiva, I think Darshan is like this, it's your wife, it's talking about your wife, this is the Iker Rea, human Rea, the Iker one is your wife, it doesn't say the husband, by the way, it says the wife, Behavdolech, anyway, so, Ava kagufo, or machabida yoser megufo, and he's machabid. He honors her even more than his own self, you know, his guf. And by the woman, it says one thing: osa ritzon baila. You know, that she takes care of herself. She has her nefse this. She has her maisi adah. She has this. She has that. But in terms of the relationship, her focus is on osa ritzon baila. You know. I want to please him, do what he wishes, you know. This sounds like, you can make this into a sexist, backward kind of whole thing, but it's not. what it's talking about is, in context with this talk that I'm giving you, is that Aaron, Torah Shabbat Peh, right? He's the one that hears the Torah from Moshe and passes it on. Moshe Rabbeinu is symbolic of the Torah Shebichtav. And you see in their relationship in Kabbalah of Netzach and Hod, Moshe is really like Das, but in terms of Netzach and Hod, Moshe Rabbeinu is a Netzach and Aaron is the Hod, the Torah Shebichtav, the Torah Shebichtav, that's Chesed and Din, Chesed and Gevur. So the actual carrying out of something is, how is it going to be done? How do I actually express it in Olam Hazeh? That's an act that requires Gevura, which is letting go of myself. Letting go of myself. The command itself is all from love. Hashem created us for one purpose. He loved us. He wanted to lehetiv. That's what all the sperm say. He created us lehetiv, to us. You know? All, it's love. How do we carry out his stuff? How do we osur ritzon baala? How do we do our master's will? That's Torah Shebaal Peh. That's what Torah Shebaal Peh is all about. And the ultimate expression of Torah Shebaal Peh was through the Baal Torah Shebaal Peh, right? The Baal Matronis, you know, the one who's the Sheshbina de Matronis, Aaron, and that's Loshina, not to change at all, not to express myself through this avoda, but rather to express Hashem's will through this avoda. Very few of us are ever, in terms of avoda, are gonna. It's very rare that we're gonna actually do that. That's a very rare thing. But that's what we're talking about in Aaron over here. We don't see that by other tzaddikim even. By other tzaddikim, there's a personal way to do things, and that's fine. By Aaron, sort of like Kabbalah Satorah had to be Nasa Venishma, and all this other stuff, and everybody had to be healed. The sick people, the blind people, the deaf people, they all had to be healed. What, to accept Torah, you have to be healed, you know? Chas v'shalom, you can't accept the ger if he's blind, you know? Chas v'shalom. But by the first matan, the matan Torah that establishes it for all doros had to be done in such a way where the person was not like, it's a blind person's accepting of the Torah in his way. No, they all had to have the kish echad, belev echad. They had to have one understanding, one clarity in everything, and it didn't last, but at least it had to be injected into them, you know? And that's the idea of Loshina. Aaron is the one who's establishing the kahuna, which is, you know, throwing yourself onto Hashem, completely being a vehicle for Hashem's will. That had to be done at the very start of it, had to be done with complete bittul. Abraham Avinu, the Kohen Gadol himself, right? The Midrash calls Abraham Avinu the Kohen Gadol. He himself is told to shecht his son. What kind of crazy avoda is that? Hashem never requires that avoda from us, God forbid, you know, for a person to have to do such a thing. Such a level of self-negation, you know, not only his own son, but Avraham Avinu was trying to make the world religious, you know, and here he's about to shecht his son, which number one is going to subvert his entire message to everybody. And talk about human sacrifice, which is the opposite of what Avraham Avinu was all about. And second of all, it was eliminating his son, who was going to be the man who was going to turn over his Torah after he died. All I have is Eliezer. Who's going to pass on the Torah to the rest of the world so that my mission will not end when I die? You know, that was Yitzchak. And yet here he is, ready to shecht him. And Hashem doesn't ask that from any of us. Thank God. So, but it had to be at the very start, had to be with complete bittul, because that's what expresses God. That's clarity in God, conscious contact with God at its best. And that's Aaron, that's Loshina, and that's not required of us, obviously. It's telling us Aaron because this is what Aaron had to do, and we can appreciate it. And that's where the Torah says, by Aaron, Loshina, that he didn't inject himself into it at all. This is the idea of prayer and meditation. Prayer, people say in program, is me talking to God. Meditation is listening to God speaking to me. That's the basic idea between prayer and meditation. People in the Torah world talk about it in a very similar way, that Torah, learning Torah, is listening to God speaking to me, and tefillah is me speaking to God. I think the Chazon Ish talks about this concept in Sefer Emunah B'Tachon, where the small Sefer Emunah B'Tachon, where he talks about the interplay between Torah and tefillah, and how they, you know, there's a connection. They feed one another like a circle going around and around, which of course gains power and we grow this way. But this is the idea of I listen to him, he listens to me, I listen to him, he listens to me. That's our experience of prayer and meditation. So what's the idea of meditation? At its prayer, we all know, you know, right? We all think we know. Meditation, it's very strange. Meditation is the idea of clearing out the mind from all my personal concerns, which the Shulchan Aruch Paskin we're supposed to do before davening. It's called lahapshit, to remove, you know, to take off all of the, you know, hafshatas agashmias, sort of, you know, to take off my own concerns. This is look in the Shulchan Aruch where he talks about it. It talks about preparing for tefillah. He talks about this idea. We're supposed to relieve ourselves of all of our concerns, of all of our own issues and troubles and this and that. And there's supposed to be a point in tefillah where it's not about me and what I need, but it's about you, God. And that's it. You know? That's one of the ikarim of tefillah and what tefillah is all about. People have a hard time with scripted tefillahs, of course, because they don't express your heart if someone else wrote it, you know, but we have faith in the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah that they're expressing the right things, that they're expressing your desires. What, you know, Makinos Acha Omer wrote something? Is that what you really believe, you know, for all of you? Come on. What's going on here? The tefillah, since they wrote it, it's telling us what we should be thinking about, what we should be concerning ourselves with about, which we're not most of the time. Rav Shlomo Shvedron used to say, "Eile v'rechev, eile v'asusim." The Goyim need chariots and horses to go from place to place. V'anachnu, but us, v'shem Hashem l'keinu nazkir. As soon as we mention Hashem l'keinu, as soon as we start davening, we're going off places. We're not thinking about the davening, we're going off places. Hey, Makarov and Afaru, they might trip and fall and stuff. Banachnu, come to Banisadad. And we keep trying to focus on our own concerns in davening and lose focus on what davening is all about, which is seeking conscious contact with him and praying for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out, at least from a program perspective. Right? So now, you might say, well, and this, like I said, this is part of a bigger discussion. That's a different discussion. It's a different issue. But you might say, whoa, tefillah is supposed to be for us, my desires. I'm supposed to be explain each one of my desires in detail to Hashem and this and that. And yes, that is a small part of tefillah. Except the classic idea of tefillah is connection with God. And I know there's a difference between the Hasidic understanding of tefillah and the non-Hasidic understanding of tefillah. No, I'm not getting into that. Okay, please. I'm talking about the simple, you know, and also in Torah, you know, what the Shema is and stuff. I'm not getting into that. I'm just saying on a very simple level, tefillah is supposed to be an experience. I think everyone can agree that tefillah is an opportunity to raise to be raised above myself for a period of time every day. And that's why the Mechaber writes about this idea of relieving myself of my self-concerns and my worries and Olam Hazeh stuff. And, you know, I'm not a Lubavitcher, but I happen to know that the Baal Tanya writes in, if you look in the back of the Tanya there, there's a bunch of Igaros letters that he wrote. One of those letters talks about a kid, I think it's a kid, a young person, who's depressed. And he says, how do I daven? I'm depressed, and it doesn't work. And I think it's the Baal Tanya's letter, I think. Maybe it's from one of the Rebbe's. But anyway, so he says, well, sit before davening for a while and just cry your head off. Think about all your troubles and all your personal concern and all your worries and all your fears and how bad life is. Think through each one of those things. Let it out. Cry it out. Let yourself think about it, because anyway, you're thinking about it all day, aren't you? Of course you are. So think about it all day. Think about it for that period of time before davening in order to just let it go already. Get it out. The of all people, the amazing Alter of Slobodka talks about the same exact idea, that if you haven't had an experience on a regular basis, you know, every couple of weeks or whatever, of crying and pouring out your emotions, not in thrummed out tefila. He's not talking about being a you know, it's you, I love you, you know, and this and that. He's talking about yourself. And if you're a masturbator, professional masturbator, faker, and porn user, so then you know that there's a big part of you that's, you know, that has other priorities. Be honest. Let it all out. Let all that concern out. Tell him the truth. Sex is so important to me. COVID is so important to me. The fact that I'm this and that my sister here, you know, is, you know, marrying the wrong guy, and I'm all concerned, and I want to convince her not to, and here and there. But they get your concerns out that are all really self-centered. I think things should be run one way, and they're being run another way, and I think life stinks, and I'm depressed about this and depressed about that. It sounds so depressing and so negative. Okay. But it's in you all day anyway. That's how you're walking around, ain't it? So if you are, so then let it out. Express it, let it out for a few minutes, 10 minutes or so before you daven. Get it all out of you, and then you'll be free to daven the right way. You know? Anyhow, I think in the same piece he says, any chakras that last less than an hour and a half is kind of a waste of time. But anyway, what are we going to do? Anyway, so it's kind of my diary. So, you know, for many of us, an hour and a half chakra could be OCD and really mentally ill. I don't know. But anyhow, so to getting back to the point, and I want to wrap this up because it's coming on the hour mark. I want to try to keep it to an hour. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. So prayer and meditation. Meditation here is referring to, I think, I'm told, to clearing my own mind out and enabling myself, seeking to hear God. How do I hear God? So there are many people who say, well, I prayed on it, and God told me to do blah, 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 blah. You hear this a lot. And, you know, and you hear it a lot by Christians especially. See, it's like, you know, this humility of not really knowing what God's will is in an actual situation, not really knowing it for sure, is built into Yiddishkeit. It's just not a Jewish kind of thing. It's part of Ein Sof Kol Hanes. You hear a voice, you know, Lo B'Shamayim, we say, you know, so this and that and that. So, you know, that's a certain humility, really, actually, when it comes to how to work my life. I don't pretend that, oh, God told me. All of a sudden, you're a Navi. I didn't know. That's interesting. I thought that, you know, Esther was the end of the Nebuchadnezzar and the here and there. You know, so all of a sudden, you're a Navi. Wow. So, you know, so what do you mean God spoke to me? What does that mean, God spoke to me? And Bill, by the way, Bill W. in the 12 and 12, goes into, and maybe in the big book too, I don't know, but in the 12 and 12, he goes in, you know, at some length, talking about the danger of people who pray and say, well, and then I heard God tell me X, Y, and Z. He says, these people who say that, a lot of times it's not because, you know, God spoke to them or anything remotely like that. It's because this is what they wanted. So, of course, they heard God tell them this. Of course, they feel that God is telling them this because this is what they want. That's all. You're just saying what you want, and you're pinning it on God, which is the same thing he did before, you know? And this is what a lot of fringe guys do in sex addiction. They'll say, it's my Yetzer Hara. That's pinning it. That's blaming it on God. That's pinning it on God. It's ridiculous. So, anyway, for an addict, I mean, it's not going to help you. So it's just blaming. So what's the, you know, 12 steps is about self-responsibility. It's finally accepting responsibility for yourself. We admit it, we are da-da-da-da-da. It's all about imena nili nili. It's the opposite of like, passivity and all that. So anyway, so what's this business of meditation then? It's listening to God. How do I listen to God? So listening to God comes from the third step. Surrendering myself and my life, my will and my life, into his care, trusting him, that's a process we began at the third step, and we're actually the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth are all the ways to get our own ego out of the way, to get myself out of God's way. That's the purpose, the sole purpose of, in terms of step 11, that's the sole purpose of steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, is to get my character defects, my instincts run amok out of God's way, my arrogance, my self-concern, my desires and fears, expectations. All those things are all in my character defect list in step 4. The damage that I've caused as a result of them is in my list of people that I've harmed in step 8. And I surrender my defects in step 6 and 7. I right the wrongs that I've done in steps 9 and 10. And now I've gotten myself a little bit out of the way by step 11. It's time to use that and say, well, now that I've done a hafshata sagashmias, I've gotten myself a little bit out of the way, I can seek, I'm mukhshar lakach now, to seek through prayer and meditation, perhaps for the first time in my life, I'm really mukhshar now, I'm prepared now, I'm mesugal now, to seek through prayer and to try, to endeavor, through humbly, through prayer and meditation, to improve, not to achieve conscious contact. You know, no, contact, we've got it. You know, no, it's to improve my conscious contact with God. Humility, humility, humility. It's all through this. There's no black and white. You know, there's no extremes. There's no expectations. It's just saying I'm endeavoring, I'm seeking to improve my conscious contact with God. My contact I can't improve because it is, you know, and there's no one who can change that. You know, this is the way God made it. He's in charge. He runs everything. He is everywhere. He is everything. We're really only in his mind. That's our existence, if you can call it existence. He's the only thing that's a nimsa, that's mukhrach, you know. He's the only thing that has to, quote-unquote, exist. In other words, by definition, is existence. We're not, by definition, existence. You know, we die, we change. You know, ani Hashem lo shenisi. Hashem doesn't change because he's perfect, which, by the way, is why you cannot understand punishments as real punishment, because he doesn't need your mitzvahs or, you know, at all. It's all for you, you know. So you have to understand this idea of onishim, of scharva on, of the onish part of the scharva onish, in a very different way, which really is an entirely different talk, but that is novea from this idea. That he cannot be that he has any needs from me, and that I wronged him in any way or deserve this because of what I did to him in any way. So you have to kind of, that's a whole different subject, really. But But this idea, again, of meditation is this Aharon Lo Shina, that he didn't inject himself into his avoda, he let himself go. He was Mafshid Agashmias Ad Kedei Kach, that in the avoda, where there was no stamp on the lighting of the menorah that you could tell that Aharon even did it or had a contribution in it. There was no Aharon style in there. It was, you looked at it and you would see nothing but Hashem's will. Now you understand why Aharon and Moshe are brothers. They're both the two Shokayim. They're the legs that everything stands on. You know, in the Pasuk Chayo, why are they the legs? Everything stands on them. You know, like the Yochin and Boaz. Now you see it. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu was an Aspaklaria HaMe'ira, and Me'ira doesn't mean bright. Me'ira means clear. He was a lens that was clear. There was no sigim in there because there was no motion there. You know, he would open his mouth and the Shechina was medaberes mitoch chrono. The Shechina spoke from his throat. Okay? So there was no Moshe Rabbeinu there. That's why you see that he was he got into so much trouble when he said Shimuno Hamorim. Whatever he did, that was something that looked like arrogance. It looked like kas, which comes from arrogance and gaiva. And that was his only sin. That was his only, you know, this thing that he says, that he did something wrong, and now he can't go into Eretz Yisrael. It's all because of a pagam in that, a pagam. I don't know what you can call it, even a pagam, but whatever it is, in that exact thing, that was what he's all about. And you see the same thing by Yosef HaTzadik. That was like the thing that was failing him in that one thing was that he went last his mom. And you see by Avraham Avinu. What was the test? The Zohar Kodesh says that he abandoned his wife to the Mitzrim and allowed them to take her and this. And it's like, you know, it's a lack of chesed. It's like, we're not saying that those, that Avraham didn't have chesed, or the Yosef wasn't Mugder Min Ha'arayas, or Hasim Shalom, or that Moshe Rabbeinu had gaiva and kas. We're not saying that. We're saying that this is what you're tested in. This is where your growth is in. This is what's going to happen to you. This is where all the action is, you know, for a person on that level, not for you or me. That's for Shalom. We should have like a one thing where our avoda and this, and we should be tested and focus on winning and this. That's a horror for us, as we, if you're on this call, probably have already discovered. That is not the Ratzon Hashem for you. Because you can see it doesn't work. So, you know, but that's where these people, that's what makes Yosef Midas HaYesod, a man, flesh and blood, who is Midas HaYesod. And Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what makes him an Aspaklaria HaMe'ira. The Torah should come from him. He was a Yilud Isha, and the Malachim wanted to burn him, and this and that. What's going on? The issue, the Inyan is very, it's very clear. He had no ego. He had what the addicts are trying to get in steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, he set himself aside more than any other Navi ever did and probably ever will do. Probably. He was Aspaklaria HaMe'ira, meaning a lens that was completely clear. Completely clear. And Mavato himself. And that's his connection to Aharon. Aharon was the same way. Aharon was not obviously not the same Aspaklaria HaMe'ira, but there's a reason why Aharon was the Navi of Moshe Rabbeinu. That Aharon was like an Elohim to Paro, and I'm sorry, that Moshe was like an Elohim to Paro, the Torah says, and Aharon was Nevi'echa. There's a reason why Hashem made them the team. It's because Aharon also shared in some other way. In some other, you know, I don't want to say Madrega. I don't know what the word Madrega means over here. But in some other way, Aharon was also excelling in that midah of bitul of self, which is not negation of self. It's just that my focus is on God, not on me. You know? But it's not about me. It's not about my schar. It's not about my this. It's not about my that. It's about you, God. And you and I can try all this stuff, and it's great for us, but we can't fantasize that we've got it, because that will lead to complete failure and destruction, because then it turns into arrogance. As soon as I hear guys saying, the word madrega and this and that, I know it's got to be arrogance has slipped in here and is taking over the situation. It's got to. That's the way it always is. That's the way it always was. That's why the guys who will never quit the schmutz and the man, and the sex with self are the guys who are thinking of Tshuva Gemurah. As long as your goal is on Tshuva Gemurah, you're never going to quit. As long as your goal is on Tikkun, as soon as I hear guys talking about saying the Tikkun Kloli, I know that they're going to fail. Because the Tikkun Kloli, what Rabbi Nachman wasn't talking about sex addicts back in 1700. You know? I mean, come on. Come on. A person who's a sex addict has a higher power. Besides, even if he's from, or a religious Catholic, or whatever. He has a higher power. Besides God, he has another higher power, and it's called naked people and orgasm and erotic pleasure. It's a power greater than himself that brings him to insanity. And he's moser nefesh for it, and he uses tznius to hide it so that it will stay protected and he'll be able to keep having access to it. Because if you tell your husband or wife that you're doing it, then obviously it's going to jeopardize your access to it. And that's half of the reason why people don't do that. Even in cases where, those cases where they should, they won't, because they say it's because they're scared of divorce and this or that. Yeah, that's part of it. But at least 50% of it is because they know deep down inside, they don't realize it, but they know that deep, they're aware that deep down inside, if they tell, their access to their schmutz is going to be curtailed. Because now they got someone on their back, the jig is up. Now they're going to check your emails, now they're going to check where you are, and you're not going to be able to get it as much, and that is a terror. That's terrifying. Because the worship of your God is, you know, what comes between you and your true God. And this is talking about a person who also believes in Hashem and is a good Jew, a good person, who really is trying to and really does love their spouse, you know, perhaps, you know. And there still can be this stuff going on where there's dual citizenship. So, you know, that's a problem. That's painful. If you're having tremendous pain in yourself and you can't look at your eyes in the mirror for more than a second or two, you can't do these things, there's a big problem. Yeah, then you probably have a double life. It's not just guilt. Guilt you go to therapy to try to help you with. Living a double life isn't a matter of guilt. It's a matter of you're living a double life. That's crazy. So my life is unmanageable. I mean, that's what that is. Living a double life is an unmanageable life. Even if you seem to be managing, that's no way to live. And if you feel like it's okay, then it is okay for you. If you feel like it's not okay and you can't stand it anymore, 12 steps is here for you. Among many other tools, probably, but 12 steps is a beautiful way if you choose it. You know, if you choose it and you do it, it works. You know? Rarely have we seen anybody fail who's thoroughly followed our path. So anyhow, just closing up the thing now, because it's really coming now. It's about an hour, and a little bit over an hour now, I'm sorry. This idea of Loshina is related to the idea of meditation, not prayer. The idea of meditation, it's clearing myself out of the way, which is steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, getting myself out of God's way and allowing myself to become a place where God's will is safe, where it can actually abide, it can actually soak in and I can become aware of it and accept it. And the main, simplest, most basic acceptance of God's will for me is that true main acceptance of his will for me is life itself. Life events, life itself. That's the basic acceptance of God's will for me. I talked about that on another talk where I talked about step 3 mainly, putting myself into God's care, and I explained how God expresses his will for you in maybe 100 times, in 100 different things a day regarding mitzvahs. You know, do this, do that, do the other thing. But in divrei rishus, which most people believe is the ikar of where our avodas Hashem is, in divrei rishus, not in divrei mitzvah, kiso, kaso, and koso, those are in mitzvahs. That's divrei rishus. In divrei rishus, God's will for you and me is expressed in millions of ways every day. The kind of mood that your boss is going to be in today depends on 20 factors. In the interplay of 100 factors, maybe. The way that each one of your coworkers or chavrusas is going to feel, or your spouse, and the health stuff that's going on, the way the children are, how your children are functioning today, and the traffic with all the thousands of people on the road. If you live in a place where there's traffic, it's, you know, if you live in L.A. or Tel Aviv, Rahavil, then, you know, you don't have traffic. You just have parking lots. But every single one of those cars is guided by Hashem, tailored by Hashem in a specific way in order to achieve a certain result for you, perhaps, you know, slow you down, speed you up. Whether your car works or not, how fat you are, how skinny you are today, how do you wake up? What is with you today? Whether this hurts or that hurts. The interactions that you have with all the people around you that affect you much, much more than whether you put on tefillin or not. You know, whether you put on tefillin or not affects you a little bit, and how you put on tefillin affects you 10 minutes later. What effect does it have on you? You know, you forget that you're even wearing tefillin, or afterwards, you know, you're in the middle of breakfast in a bowl of cereal and you're still thinking about your tefillin. Well, then are you still thinking about your Shema? Oh, okay. Then are you thinking about the beautiful Baruch Sha'amar? Yeah, okay. But and how about the Shemoneh Esrei? And there are 19 brachas. So which one? Oh, did Bilam Al-Shinim help you? Yes, I was dovuk with that, and I was into that and connected with Hashem through that. It was a tremendous tefillah. And how about Baruch Aleinu? And yeah, oh, that too. By the time you're done, you're going to be basically out of your mind. You can't be affected like that. You know, there's a flow to life, and where you are, and that's where you are. So, and the way the cereal tastes to you, it's all Hashgachas Hashem on you and me right now. Millions of factors being put together over the course of the day. There are millions of ways that God is demonstrating His will for you right now. What affects you more regarding the tefillin thing? What affects you more, the way your tefillin are, or not, the way that you concentrated properly or improperly, Chas v'Shalom, when you put on your tefillin, or the mood that your wife is in, or the way that one of your kids is, screaming and yelling, he doesn't want to go to school, and this and that, and that, and that, and that, you know? Which one affects you more 2 hours later? Obviously, your child, not the concentration of the fill-in that you did and this and that. It's obvious. We're all affected by Olam Hazeh, Rishus things, far more deeply and broadly than we are affected by Mitzvah things. Mitzvah things we do, Baruch Hashem. And we do them with allegiance and, you know, and good, you know, with Ava and Yira and dedication. Okay. But how much do they affect us? And this isn't a speech to try to get you to be affected by all the mitzvahs that you do. That'll happen or it won't happen. That's up to you. You know? And like I said before, you're not going to be affected by every mitzvah that you do all through the day. But whether you like it or not, you will be affected by the fact that you have back pain all day. It will affect your mood at night, the way you sleep or not. The way that the relationship you have between you and your wife, your kids, it's all going to be affected by your back pain, if you have it, Chas v'Shalom, or whatever other problem you have. And it's going to affect it in a profound and continuous way. And that's divrei rishus, your health. It affects it all in a continuous fashion. And that's all Hashgachas Hashem. That's His will for you. That's part of His will for you. And it goes continuously through the day and affects
dozens and dozens of different things about you, whether you're a man or a woman. Every day in the morning, I wanted to end with the brachas, but I'm not going to do that now because of time. But as you go through the brachas and Birchas HaShachar, you go through the different things that Hashem is how he's interacting, intersecting with your world today. Shelo asani goy, shelo asani oved, shelo asani isha, shelo asani kirtzono. What does this mean? What does it mean? That's about who I am. What does that mean? That's all Hashgachas Hashem, and it carries and defines practically, not everything, but most things about your day are affected by those three things. And hanosim l'sech livina, your understanding, you know? And it's all Hashgachas Hashem. It's all the gift of Hashem and his guidance of you right now. That's him caring for you. This is the way he's caring for you right now. In AA, they like to say, what's happening to you right now is the very best that Hashem can give you. It's a cheeky thing to say. What does it mean? Well, doesn't Hashem want me to be rich? Doesn't Hashem want me to be healthy? Doesn't Hashem want me to be this? Doesn't Hashem want me to be that? Well, no. Hashem, what Hashem wants is whatever is. Now the question is, what does he want from me? Well, that's my bechira in how I allow it to affect me and how I perceive it. That's up to me. That's God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can. This is what davening for a sick person is. This is what davening for anything means. Many of the people understand that it means I daven and thereby change internally. And now his will for me might change. The Shulchan Aruch Kaddish says the reason that you add a name on a person who's almost dead, God forbid, that you add a name to such a person when they're mamish and they're worst sakana, how do you add a name? He says, because when you add a name, you change, you might, if that is Hashem is maskim and also adds his name, you have changed his tachlis in the world, or her tachlis in the world. And now they have other reasons to live, and they might get an extended life. That's the idea of adding a name. That's why, if they die, you don't keep the name. But it doesn't end up on the tombstone if they die. If they survive, then that name remains with them. Why? Because it added to their tachlis, and that's why, perhaps, that's why they're still alive. Okay? So, this is what's going on over here. You know, and you know, but if I'm davening and expecting him to give me this thing, then probably I need more meditation. If I need him to give me this thing, rather, not expecting. If I intellectually, emotionally need him to give me this thing, then I'm not putting myself in his care. I'm putting his will into my care, and it doesn't work that way. Because last time I checked, he was God. And not me. You know? This is not a religious discussion to me. This is a secular discussion. This is a simple Derech Eretz discussion that should be the Yerusha and the portion of Jew, Gentile, everyone. This is just simple same living if you're a spiritual person. Nothing Jewish about this. There are examples of it in Yiddishkeit, but it doesn't make it Jewish. It doesn't make it exclusively Jewish in this regard. You know. So, and then the rest of the brachas fit right into this. The rest of the brachas are, after I talk about how he made me today, why do you make the brachas Shelo Asani Oved today? Why do you make a bracha shelo asani oved? He didn't make me an oved yesterday either. Because it's a new day. It's one day at a time. It's a new reality today. Because it's now. Maybe you should make the bracha 85 times. And Taka Rabbeinu Tam, I think, holds that you can make brachas hashvach over and over and over. Chas v'shalom, if you have OCD, you're destroying yourself by doing that. But if you don't, you can ha'olashis para adam kolayom, Rabbi Yochanan says. It's like, you can say, because the Birchas HaShvach, according to, I think, Rabbeinu Tam, is never a bracha levatala because it's always true. L'haniach tefillin, you're not putting on tefillin. What do you? Oh, it's a bracha levatala. That's for shalom here. Why would you say that? But a bracha says shvach. It's always true. It's not really going to be bracha levatala. I don't know if we paskin that way, but certainly we do not say brachas. You know, there are some who are more makel and brachas hashachar, by the way. But chassidim, they generally on Shavuos in the morning, even if they stayed up all night, they'll say the whole brachas hashachar over again because it's a new day. Generally, by the Litvish Island, they don't do that. They have a person motzi them. Okay, fine. Who slept? You know what I'm saying? So, but this idea, it's a new day. It needs new brachas. Today is a new day that I'm not an eved. You know, it's a new day, and I need to say that bracha again each day to live today with that awareness of God's will for me is that I'm not an eved today. And what is an eved? What is a ben cholin? What does that mean? The brachas are deep. And need to take a couple of minutes, 2 minutes at least, for the brachas, 2 minutes, not while driving. And Mr. Burr says not to do that. Not while driving, not while doing anything. Just say the brachas. You know, that awareness is very important. What is God's will for me? The first thing that's God's will for me is that I am me and not you. It's not about me becoming a better person in this. That comes later. That's not the issue right now. The morning begins with acceptance of who I am and what I am, who I am not and what I am not. That's the erstens. That's how you start your day if you want to be sane and real. You know? And then the brachas go on from there to more functional things about, you know, it starts off with, it ends with Shlosani Isha, and then for a man, and Shlosani Kiritzono, the word Kiritzono is a, as far as I understand it, seems to be a zivug there between Chaf Vav, which is the first letter in Kiritzono, and the last letter in Kiritzono is Chaf and Vav, and Ritzono is Shemo, which, you know, his name. That's Chavav means him himself, and his name is, you know, that's what it says in Pirkei Dei Rabbi Eliezer, that before Hashem created the world, it was Hu Ushmo Levad. That's Kiritzono. You know, that's the idea of that. But the Ritzono is Gematria Shemo, but the Chavav is Gematria Yukevokhe. But the idea of that's defining who I am and what I am in different ways, and I'm not going to go into that too long, and not that I have that much to say about it, but they're about define understanding and accepting myself, self-acceptance, you know? And then Malbish Arumim, it's funny that it comes out right after a man says, Shalom Sana Yisha, and then you say, Malbish Arumim, I'm sorry, Pokeach Ivrim, because by Adam and Chava, you know, Hashem gave him a wife, and the next thing they did was they ate from the Eitz Hadas. And Batipokach Ne'enei Shneihem, Vayidu Ki Eirumim Hem. And they knew that they were naked, and so that we say Pokeach Ivrim and Malbish Arumim, which are the tikkun. It's about tikkun of these things. And understanding that this doesn't, you know, in Christianity, the original sin defines the human being. It's more than Yiddishkeit, where we say that it might define our job, but it doesn't define us. And that's the idea of these brachas, that they're a tikkun for this kind of stuff. And then we start going into stuff that every human being can share, which is matir asurim, that I can move, zokei kufim, that I can stand up. You know, how do you function if you can't stand up? You can't. There's no base for your arms and legs to do things. This is all preparation for being able to walk. That's Raka or Talamayim, which he does for everybody. To everyone, you know. And if you have a Rav Moshe Valley sefer, open that up. Look in there. Look in this pasuk. Look at his pirushim on that, and you'll see beautiful stuff. It's the Talmud of the Ramchal or the Moshe Valley. Great stuff on this pasuk. But you know, that's each person separately. For everyone equally. And then, means each person is, Hashem sets their way. And that's understanding, accepting His will for me as well. You know? And then the brachos go on, higher, you know, in Yanim after that. But the point here is acceptance of His will for me is what meditation gives me. Acceptance of His will for me is setting myself aside and accepting His will for me. So living in a programmed way is active meditation. It's living meditation. The surrender and acceptance of the program that the program's talking about in its Derech Eretz is living meditation. It's what Aaron and Moshe Rabbeinu were. They were not ego-driven at all. How are you seichel-driven if you still have a big giant ego? You're fooling yourself. Moach Shalit Alalev doesn't happen to you in that case. It doesn't happen to any of us completely, except it doesn't happen to you or me at all until we do a hapshata of our desires and ourself and this. And it doesn't mean not masturbating yourself. It doesn't mean not sinning. I'm talking about self-concern and self-absorption. AA, they talk about self-centeredness is not how much you think about yourself, but how often you think about yourself. It's not an idea so much in Kamas, but in Echis, but also in Kamas. That's living meditation is living acceptance of His will for me. That's freedom. That's not being an evet. If I'm a slave, what's so bad about being a slave? Shalom asani avid. I am avdei Hashem. No? I know avdei the kuchet b'yuchu, right? So shalom asani avid. It's a stira. No. It means an evid to myself. You know? An evid to anyone else other than God means I'm an avid. Hashem didn't make me that way. Ha'elokim bara es ha'adam yashar. Behem vikshu cheshbonos rabim. We became avedim to ourselves, you know, by having many cheshbonos. I think it's at the end of Kohelet, but I'm saying it to look it up. I hope I'm not saying it for you to know that I know where this stuff is, and I'm probably wrong about half of the Mar Makomas I give anyhow. But the point over here is that sought through prayer and meditation to achieve conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out, is you're talking basic serenity in living, which is only tried with any real seriousness after an addict does 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's only done at that point, you know? Because there's no real sense in expecting it to succeed at all. Still though, even if you're not an addict, and even if you are an addict and you haven't worked